Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Search with Candor. It's a monthly recap episode. So I am your host, Jack Chambers Ward, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Williams Cook.
Hello.
We're back in the studio once again. The boys are back in town, as it were. And we're talking about all the important search marketing news for the month that was April 2024. We've already recapped a lot of it in the Core Updates newsletter, so do go and check that out if you haven't already. And, of course, we'll be talking about lots of interesting stuff to do with AI, because, yay, of course, we will. We'll be talking about Microsoft AI, some Brave Search. That's right, Brave Search. I know I've been talking a little bit about Baidu on the show recently, but we're actually talking about Brave Search, which is, I don't think, a thing we've ever covered on the show before.
No, I don't think so.
And, of course, a little bit of Google news as well. But before we get to all of that, here's a word from our sponsors. Sponsor for this week is Wix Studio, the web platform that gives agencies and enterprises the end-to-end efficiency to design, develop, and deliver exactly the way they want. Whether you manage 10 sites or 1,000 sites like some agencies do, here are a few things you can do from start to finish in less than 2 minutes on Studio. You can set up native marketing integrations with Google, Bing, and more in just one click. You can save so much time by reusing custom templates, widgets, sections, and design libraries across all of your sites instead of having to build them from scratch each and every time. You can easily create seamless handovers by adding tutorials, guides, and more to your client dashboards. And speaking of dashboards, you get a full 360 view of all of your projects from one workspace with total control. And whether you're working on your site with fellow SEOs, developers, other marketers, you're able to work on the same canvas at the same time with all of your team members. And of course, you'll be able to leverage some of the best in-class SEO defaults, such as server-side rendering and automated structured data markup across all of your Wix sites. That is time up, I'm afraid, but the list keeps on going. Step into the Wix Studio by clicking the link in the show notes or the video description down below and see for yourself. Thank you so much to Wix Studio for sponsoring us here at Search with Candor. You can go to alsoask.com and check out this fantastic and unique intent research tool. As we probably already know, search intent is at the core of everything we do as SEOs. Even if you're not directly working in content, understanding what your users are trying to achieve through their searches is still pretty important. I think we can all agree. On top of this, Google has told us that it takes up to 9 searches for users to complete their goals. This can be a pretty hard picture to capture, to be honest, with traditional keyword research tools. So what if you could get hold of up-to-the-minute questions that users have asked that have been clustered by intent by Google themselves? Well, that's exactly what AlsoAsked actually does. AlsoAsked mines and organizes Google's People AlsoAsked data in real time, showing you the next most likely question your searchers are going to ask. Best of all, it's completely free. You don't even need to create an account to try out AlsoAsked. Of course, if you do find it useful, there are paid options as well. We have the free, we have the light, and we have the pro options in terms of accounts that you can subscribe to. At the touch of a button from these accounts, you can download not only the questions people are asking, but also the answers Google has selected, the website URLs, and the titles that are ranking for those answers as well. AlsoAsked has the world's only API for People AlsoAsked data, meaning you can combine this data you're pulling from whatever questions you're asking directly into tools. You can combine it with things like ChatGPT to really supercharge your content briefs and transform the way you write content at scale. Go to AlsoAsked.com and check out this fantastic intent research tool today. So let's dive in straight away with some Microsoft news, which again, I don't think is something we do very often. I know Bing has become a little bit of a hot topic recently. We're talking about Microsoft Start. Would you like to let people know what Microsoft Start is?
Sure. So I like that we're talking about Microsoft and Bing a bit more now, because normally they just get a passing mention when they do like a cool new feature that Google will copy in nine months' time. Yeah. And I think we discussed briefly in the office, I've actually been using Bing now home.
And I believe this was inspired by your father, no less, who basically said, I just prefer it or something along those lines.
Yeah, he was there first. He's the OG. But
trendsetter right there.
Yeah, I've actually been enjoying it. Like the SERP design, I find, is pretty nice. And the results are pretty good. I do think, as everyone kind of is discussing at the minute, at the moment at least, during the update, Google's lost its way a little bit for me.
Yep.
But anyway, I digress. Microsoft Start is essentially like Google Discover. So if you don't know,
it looks a little something like this, if you're on YouTube.
Nice. Yeah. So if you haven't used Google Discover either, it's essentially a bunch of stuff that Google thinks you might be interested in based on the profile it's built about you, based on your search history. And Microsoft Start is essentially the same thing. I'm assuming it's called Start, as it's like the before you do a search, this is your starting point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Google Discover, when I mention it to clients, there's still a lot of people that haven't actually heard of it.
Interesting, because I've only worked on one client here at Canda so far where we had an actual kind of like Discover strategy. I think you're right, it is definitely a blind spot for a lot of people not actively working in SEO.
Yeah.
And even I think a lot of people might do it accidentally even without even realizing what they're doing. I know I can't remember what episode it was. We showed my Google Discover on the podcast months and months and months ago. It was just as nerdy as you'd expect. And I know I spoke to my wife about it at the time and she had no idea that was a thing, but she has accidentally like scrolled to the left or right or gone down past the search box and seen a bunch of stuff that is relevant and just kind of assumed it was there because it's not particularly well labeled. Like it's not, doesn't say like, hey, here's Google Discover. Click here to get your personalized news feed and stuff.
Are you both on Android?
Yes.
So on the iPhone, it's you get it through the Google app, but it's like the default thing on the Google app.
Yes.
So when you open it to do a search, and I think a lot of people do that because it's quicker now to load the Google app and search than to load a web browser and Google. But yeah, I mean, it was, I think 2018 when I checked, it was like they had 800 million active monthly users of Discover. So I imagine that's even higher.
Yeah, because it's kind of a thing, I know we talked about this, and I won't linger on this too long because we talked about it extensively last time, was how much more the SERPs are becoming more like Discover, right? There's more personalization. Yeah. You can subscribe to topics and follow topics, which has been in Discover for a little while now. But this is the Microsoft equivalent of this. And shout out to Glenn Gabe, friend of the show, always delivering some fantastic news and updates, is Glenn Gabe, and highlighted this basically. Microsoft Start have come out with their AI policy. And in Glenn's exact words, it's a doozy. And it certainly is. So, this is kind of what you'd expect from a homepage, a front page of Microsoft Start. And let's go into some definitions of unreviewed AI-generated content and AI-assisted content, because they've actually differentiated the two, which I think is very interesting. I'll read a little excerpt for you here if you're listening as well. If it's on the screen, you can read along if you want to read along on YouTube or Spotify or whatever. Unreviewed AI-generated content, or unreviewed AIGC, what a catchy title is.
That's never going to catch.
And generated autonomously by AI refer to the generation of an output by an AI system or model without downstream human review or intervention. We've been talking about this for a while. If you're a long-time listener, you know this kind of stuff already. AI-assisted content, AIAC, again, never going to catch on in a million years. You can't pronounce it, really. What is it like? IAC?
It's going to be AIAC? The 2024 band name, AIDC.
Just do a reboot of AC/DC into AIGC. We'll do that like AI-generated music thing we found the other day and just to make some AC/DC rips
there.
Off. Yeah, yeah. Stay tuned at the end for some great music. This refers to outputs that are generated with human review, material human intervention, and or direction. In this case, output means texts, images, audio, video, designs, and other works. For clarity, we understand material human intervention to mean humans providing input or feedback. This can mean changing the AI-generated content or automating certain basic tasks, such as word or phrase replacement, to improve the efficiency of the process. Goes on to give a couple of examples, all this kind of stuff. Then the policy overview section. Our audience and user community trust us to clearly distinguish AI content from human-created content. This is something we've been talking about a lot, right? How to clearly identify AI-generated content And at what point can you trick humans? Can you trick like AI-powered AI checkers and all this kind of stuff? To maintain trust, oof, good luck, AI content on Microsoft Start must remain AI-assisted content, that's AIAC, and unreviewed AI-generated content will be prohibited with very limited exceptions. The Microsoft Start AI content policy maps to the Microsoft AI principles and responsible AI standard to provide accountability and transparency via human oversight and disclosure, and incorporates all current Microsoft Start content standards, such as prohibiting violating content and preventing plagiarism. Lots of stuff there. It's kind of what I'd expect, but it's nice to see it in writing because I feel like this has been a problem so much with the Google side of things, right? This is something we've been talking about so often where I think you and I have done enough, especially you, Mark, have enough experience with this kind of AI-generated stuff. You can kind of sniff it out when you see it a lot of the time, if it's not obvious straight away and wouldn't necessarily be caught in a clearly kind of like AI-generated thing. You get the vibe for some of the phrases, some of the tonalities and all that kind of stuff that especially things like ChatGPT and Gemini and Copilot use and things like that. How do you feel about all this? Do you think this matters? Do you think this helps to differentiate Microsoft Start from Discover? How do you feel about this in general?
I think this is quite a big story that I haven't seen many people talking about. So respect for Glenn.
Shout out to Glenn.
Surfacing it. We had Google last year, I think it was around May time, summer. I remember being hot. talk about not removing metadata from AI generated images.
Yeah.
And at the time we said, maybe this is going to come into a wider content policies. And I think we're going to see this either through actual legislation or through search engine policies, which
we talked about the legislation last month when we had the EU AI Act.
On risk assessments. So I think we're going to get to a point where unreviewed AI generated content, AIGC, as it's now called, will have to be labeled because I think it's in the user interest.
Yeah.
I can't think of really any situation where I as a user wouldn't want to know or I wouldn't value knowing if what I'm seeing is AI generated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're fundamentally tricking people otherwise. And I think that's something Google policy, at least wise, has always been. One of their first things in their webmaster guidelines since the beginning has been don't trick or deceive users.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of the way that I see people misusing AI is to trick and deceive users into thinking it's human written. And we've seen big cases of people doing it. I think it was a Vice article I was reading where I read an author say that they view unreviewed AI content essentially as vandalism of the web.
Interesting. I can totally see what they mean.
I fully agree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think there's good uses for unreviewed AI as long as you say, this is an AI summary or, when it's labeled, because then people can apply the context to it and you understand what you're getting and the caveats that go along with that. And I think the caveats that go along with that, which are causing a lot of problems at the moment, will become more natural to people. So it's like, oh, it's AI content, therefore I need to be careful and, not take it too seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it fascinating when we're talking about the potential like labeling on SERPs and stuff, right? That's going to be really interesting where you're forced into that thing or you have to maybe initially have to nominate yourself to be included in that program or whatever it is, and how much that will shift people's perspective. Because I know we were talking about this not too long ago as well, where kind of the ranking being driven by click data and you see something that is in position 3, but people are skipping position 1 and 2 to go straight to that and get the answer because perhaps it's a trusted brand or you've established yourself as a trusted source in this particular field. Will maybe seeing non-AI generators that human-created content and having that in the SERP, will people trust that more? Mm. It's more of like a human psychology question, I guess, in terms of like, not only will how that affect the SERPs, but how will people actually go through and does your content being labeled as AIGC, which it won't be labeled as AIGC, but you know what I mean. Mm. If it being labeled as that, will that make fewer people read it inherently? Or do people not care? Because I think there's enough in the bucket of people where they just either don't know or don't care. Because like If I asked my parents about this, they would have no idea whatsoever. My wife knows about it because I talk about this stuff and she endures it over dinner conversations.
Endures it. Brilliant. Yeah, I think, but that space for where AI, you know, unreviewed content is acceptable, usable, is shrinking. I think it will become essentially owned by the intermediaries like the search engines. Because I do still think, like, why would they want to send people to content that you've generated that they can just do themselves? And I wonder if we will get some brands, you know, kind of some premium brands that are essentially anti-AI in that, you know, you pay whatever the premium and it's all human content.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point.
It's artisan, homegrown, organic content. You know what I mean? Like, because
we'll redefine the term organic search.
Yeah, I think this policy, I would place a bet on this, is gonna start affecting search and websites in a wider sense of people will expect AI content to be labeled, much like if a social media person does an ad, you have to disclose that you've been paid to talk about that thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that for years.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Then people were just like, this really sucks, like just being tricked. And I think the same will happen with AI content.
Yeah, big changes for the content creators when the FTC came in and you have to do hashtag sponsored, hashtag ad. The joke of hashtag ad, hashtag sponsored that everyone would say, even if you're not actually sponsored by the product. But it became a pretty serious legal thing pretty quickly. And I know a lot of people really then like struggled to make content that people cared about because, oh, you're just doing an ad now. I don't care. And it's like, oh, you've been doing ads this whole time. Like, oh, right, I didn't even realize. Like, yeah, I know that's a big problem on the TikTok side of things, but that's a whole other conversation. But speaking of generative search stuff, let's talk about some Brave AI-powered search, shall we? Answer with AI. Brave has unveiled their new privacy-focused AI answer engine, set to handle nearly 10 billion annual queries. How exciting. Previous to this, had you used Brave Search much, Mark?
Yeah, a bit. So I kind of converted to Brave 3 or 4 years ago, and then had a stint for probably 2 years of using it. The reason I ended up switching back was it was nice to use as a user. It was frustrating because it does a lot of smart stuff with blocking ads and trackers, and it would just break like a load of websites. Like I think Also Ask doesn't even work properly, like with Brave. So it just became a bit of a nuisance, kind of managing that. And I still used Chrome for work and having to try and sync the two. So you couldn't sync with Brave. You had to like export like a paraphrase.
I had the exact same experience.
So in the end, I was just like, I couldn't be bothered to sync all the bookmarks and stuff across two browsers.
Yep.
So I still have Brave installed for like my leisurely browsing. And there's certain websites, like news sites especially, where I basically can't read the content without Brave because it's just sick with ads. But so I accidentally used Brave Search quite a bit again because I was just using the Omni search bar and I didn't find it that good, to be honest.
Yeah.
When I used it, that was in my DuckDuckGo experimental
phase.
So I was using DuckDuckGo with Brave.
Yeah, I think I'd had a pretty similar experience, to be honest. And I find this stuff interesting where Brave is that focused on privacy and blocking all the ads and stuff. It seems to be more like the techie nerdy people who care about that kind of stuff, who are aware of that stuff, as I was just saying about the AI generated stuff as well. Like, if you're aware of what tracking goes on and all this kind of stuff, you're probably a more kind of technologically focused, technology aware kind of person. And I find it interesting they're now seemingly trying to branch out a little bit and appeal to the wider audience. This is kind of my take on this. This is essentially SGE for Brave Search.
Yep.
And I have tested a couple of things. It is available now. If you want to go and test it, is literally search.brave.com and you can go and try it out for yourself. It does it without you asking. It just generates a response for you. So all of us complaining that we haven't been able to try SGE over here in the UK for a while, you can kind of do a version of it that's a little bit different. But in particular, I noticed some examples. I've got the article up here on screen that was their announcement about it and talking about how they've got several unique aspects and how their SERPs are so much cleaner and cleansed of all the spam and crap and all this kind of stuff. Like, almost exact words from them is, it's cleansed of all the spam and rubbish. I was like, okay, shot over the bow of Google there a little bit with the recent chaos of the SERPs and stuff.
Big statement to make.
Yeah, exactly. Picking on the big boy there. So I'll read a little of the initial little bullet points here, and I want to get into some SERP comparisons between what has been generated by Brave Search at Answer with AI, then a Bing SERP, and then a Google SERP. Not the generative searches for Bing and Google, I'll hasten to add, but I'll get into that in a moment. So Brave Search Answer with AI is unique for these special reasons, according to Brave. It is the first privacy-preserving answer engine, they're using the phrase answer engine, which I think is interesting, available at scale, serving almost 10 billion queries a year that Brave Search currently receives, making it overnight one of the largest AI solutions on the market. Exactly as we were just talking about, we still don't have proper access to SGE, and Brave Search has kind of beaten them to it out of nowhere overnight.
I mean, Google does about 8.5 billion searches a day.
Yeah. So yeah.
When they say one of the biggest, it's like, yeah.
For like 10 minutes.
Yeah. You are like in the top 10 or whatever.
By default.
There's a big leap between position one and two and you.
Yeah. It produces near instant answers with sources cited. I'll get onto that in a moment. With sources alongside traditional search results. The answers result from the only independent search index at scale outside of big tech, as the largest real-time answer engines rely on Google or Bing search engines directly. Cool. They're basically trying to differentiate themselves from Bing and Google and all that kind of stuff. One of the examples they use in their own article is directors of Batman movies. And this is something I quizzed Mark, and then Mark, you quizzed some of our fellow Candalorians on earlier on. Can you name a Batman director?
No, of course not.
I found this fascinating.
Normal people can do this, Jack.
I know I do a film podcast, but I feel like even before I was doing Sequelizers, I could still name a Batman director.
Yeah, but you did Sequelizers because you're interested in films.
Sure, like that's
true. I'm basic when it comes to films. I know a few actors, directors, art directors, people that make special effects. All completely alien to me. I don't know who does the magic. Just make the pretty pictures come on the screen.
Well, fair. Because I find this result in particular absolutely fascinating. I have never heard of Lambert Hillier. He directed the 1940s Batman serials.
Nice.
Way before Adam West or Christian Bale or anybody else took on the Batman suit. This is the old school stuff during World War II that was like the first time Batman was on screen.
Is that like OG Batman?
Is OG Batman. Batman debuted in 1939, and this is early 40s. So he is like barely a thing in the, you know, the grand scheme of pop culture and stuff. Obviously, he made a big impact. But of all of the directors to pick...
The first one seems the most logical,
the first
right?
one kind of makes the most sense, right? In a way, it's very logical. In another way, it's absolutely mental. And never in a million years would someone searching directors of Batman movies in 2024 want an answer from 80 years ago. Don't get me wrong, there's pictures. If you're looking on YouTube and Spotify here, you can see other directors on the top right there. There's a big picture of Tim Burton. You can see a little Joel Schumacher and a Zack Snyder there as well. Just at the bottom, you can notice a couple of names. You can kind of expand on all that kind of stuff. I can see where it's coming from, but I think it's terrible. Next up, let's talk about Google, because this is insane. So we have directors of Batman movies, the same search again. Again, not generative this time. This is just a straight up Google search.
It's a knowledge graph.
This is a knowledge graph search feature, exactly. We have Matt Reeves. Has Matt Reeves directed a Batman movie? Yes, he has. He directed The Batman from 2022. Yeah. Joel Schumacher also has directed a Batman movie. Christopher Nolan did the Christian Bale ones. Michael Keaton is Batman. He'd never directed a Batman movie.
Did he not like help or anything?
No, he acted in it. Zack Snyder.
Are you sure though? 100%. Because sometimes they act and direct.
Trust me.
He didn't do a bit.
I would know.
Okay.
I'll be corrected by some film nerd out there, I'm sure. I'll ask Matt, my co-host on Sequelizers. He'll know. Zack Snyder has kind of technically directed.
Did Keanu Reeves do one?
Absolutely not. No. Ben Affleck. Also has never directed a Batman movie. He was Batman in Zack Snyder's movie that featured Batman. He is a director of different films that has also played Batman. Then George Clooney, again, has played Batman, the famous one with the nips we were talking about before we started recording.
Is that Clooney?
That's Clooney. Kilmer had the nips and Clooney continued the nips. And the Bat credit card and the Bat butt. He has like a little like crease in his suit for his butt. Like it's a whole thing. It's incredibly homoerotic. Keanu Reeves has never directed a Batman movie. As far as I know, he's never been in a Batman movie. And just behind us there is Jensen Ackles, who I believe has voiced Batman in animated TV shows and animated films and stuff.
So far, you could say Brave is winning.
Yeah, yeah. Brave produced a thing, A, I didn't know, which I thought was very interesting, and it was chronologically the first, which again, there's some logic to that. This is 4 out of 9 are actual, like, it's more wrong than it is right in the Google knowledge graph thing at the top here. Now, over to Mark's favorite search engine, Bing.
Come on, Bing.
Bing absolutely nails it. Christopher Nolan, tick. Matt Reeves, tick. Yoshiaki Kawajiri, tick. Very clever answer. Tim Burton, tick. Zack Snyder, tick. Chris McKay, sort of, kind of, tick. Yeah, sure, he did the Lego Batman stuff. Joel Schumacher, tick. Loads of options there. They kind of nailed it.
See, I told you Bing's pretty good.
Bing's
now.
The best.
Bing's pretty good.
Clever, cool, sure, not really the answer to the question I was looking for. Don't know what the hell's going on here. And then Bing absolutely kind of nailed it.
Yeah.
I'm impressed by Bing. So yeah, that's my summary of Brave Search.
based on one very niche search.
Hey, they put it on their announcement article. That's up to them to get it right. But yeah, I find this stuff very interesting where you come around to actually quite like the SERP design of this. I think it's fine. It looks very, very similar to the little bits and pieces I've seen from SGE. I know when I was speaking to Garrett Sussman about SGE a few months ago now when he was testing it in the US, what I've now done, and I've been doing some searches before we started recording, you can literally see it type it out in front of you in real time. It highlights certain keywords, not those kind of keywords, but important phrases and words and stuff that it will literally like list the names of the people and all that kind of stuff. It looks fine. It seems to be better than Google at the moment, which is saying something. What has your experience been with Brave Search AI? Answer with AI so far.
Yeah, so I just had a quick kind of play with it before we were recording. And one thing I find interesting is that the answer with AI will just have a crack at anything you ask it. So I started with a query about how to detox from cocaine at home.
Okay, lovely.
And it gave, in fairness, quite a pretty good answer. It was kind of like, yeah, you can't really do it, but here's ideas.
That would be a thing someone would ask, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It's a specific search I look for because technically detox is a thing and there isn't a way to detox from cocaine in terms of, like, there's no chemical intervention. It's basically mean cessation. But anyway, and like you said, it gives sources, which I think is really helpful. And it labels it, obviously saying this is generative AI. But you can just keep pushing. So I ended up on which is best for children, methamphetamines or cocaine, if I had to choose one. And it's like, yeah, they're both pretty bad, like shouldn't give them to kids. However, if you had to choose... And then it lists some kind of like pros and cons.
Wow.
Mainly cons. And summarizes again with, you probably shouldn't do that. But it's just, and you know, and I started doing stuff about like how to do various like CPR things and medical stuff. And it was just like, I'll take a shot at that.
What happened to YMYL, folks? Like what?
Yeah. So it's interesting because I don't think Google could get away with that.
No.
If they were just like, you know, that would make, I saw, you know, lots of people complaining because Google added a filter for kids in on best CBD gummies.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like,
because it had the word gummies and it kind of got, well, the example we talked about when the SERPocalypse happened, like 2 years ago at this point, the example I've brought up multiple times on this with the stick your fingers down their throat if somebody's choking thing, like people freaked out about that. It's like, that's somebody's life. That's life and death situation. Like that is a literal thing that will kill the person in an emergency CPR situation. And it's something I have continually brought up for 2 years because of how egregious it was. And then you found stuff that's arguably much, much worse in like 15 seconds on Brave AI.
I know where the bodies are kept. Yeah, so I think it's something you can do as like a challenger because you know, Google's almost like a public service in a way. It's like a utility for people. And there's a certain level of, we just trust what it tells us, rightly or wrongly. And I think this is an earlier point I was saying around, we're not there yet with a cultural shift and a cultural understanding of the limitations of AI.
Right, so
even if you do what Brave does, which is basically like just caveat it with, this just may be a load of rubbish. That's not enough when you're showing it to 8 billion people a day.
They only do 10 billion a year.
Yeah. So I'm interested in seeing how that kind of progresses. The results it gave, actually, like even to those queries, weren't too bad. Like if you read them, it was basically like, if I was putting dangerous stuff, it was kind of like, don't do it. But because it's an LLM, you can twist the question. If you really push, you can force it to give some kind of answers.
You can force it to like play roles. If you were a doctor, what should you do? What if you were a lawyer? It's like, this isn't legal advice. But if I was a lawyer, I would say this.
So, yeah, I think some of that comes down to the user and how you're responsibly using it. But that's a whole education piece, right?
Yeah,
about absolutely. You can't just chuck technology out there and then expect people to understand how to use it. I think it's pretty good for what it is. I don't think it's like comparable to like a prime time. Yeah, we could just switch this on for everyone tomorrow because, you know, I'm sure people would get hurt.
Yeah,
over that.
I found that something you just said sparked a thought in my brain of like, where do you kind of kick in with the accountability and responsibility of it, right? Like, so much of SGE has been tested for so long, obviously being using Copilot pretty actively now, and then coming back round to Answer with AI with Brave. This is, and I'm kind of thinking of it in the phrasing of that AI Act we talked about last month, where you're talking about the risk associated with it and the level of risk and the potential danger and all this kind of stuff. Are you less at risk because you're serving that much fewer queries? Like, something being wrong on Brave Search is far less dangerous than something being wrong on Google. So are these search engines and then their answer engine AI equivalents being held to like similar standards? Like, can you essentially get away with more dodgy stuff, like recommending which drug is best for your children on Brave? Whereas, like you said, if somebody found that on Google, not only the SEO community, but Mumsnet or whatever would absolutely crucify them and freak out and be like, this is incredibly dangerous. Yeah. This is going to affect people's lives. The fact that you were able to find it in a matter of seconds on Answer with AI, and I have not seen anybody talking about it because most people probably don't know it exists. Yeah. Like,
It's definitely a different standard. And I think it's a different type of user using Brave.
Absolutely.
Like, using Brave Search is like a specific choice you make.
Yeah.
It's not even like Bing.
Didn't you say you'd accidentally used it though?
But I made a choice to use Brave. You know,
I'm taking the Brave. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's because I think you can fall into using Bing.
Yeah.
It comes with Windows and all this and various search engines. But Brave is like, you know, you've got to.
It's a conscious choice.
I mean, Brave, you know, the fundamental thing about the Brave browser is they have their own cryptocurrency called BAT, which they use to pay content creators.
Yep.
And that's a big pull of Brave. So if you're kind of like choosing to use a browser because it has like a built-in cryptocurrency wallet as a way of rewarding and monetizing stuff, you know, you're probably a lot more likely to be able to make judgments around AI.
Yeah, definitely.
Content. But yeah, different standard.
Yeah, interesting. Let us know what you think, folks, if you've used Brave Search, Answer with AI. Like I said, it's available to use. It's not even in testing. You can just freely use it. Create all the chaos you want. Please do share any weird queries or any Batman related searches you can find weird answers to with us on social media and all that kind of stuff. And let's get to our final topic. We're going to talk about site reputation abuse, which is a term that we kind of have been batting around for a little while, but Google has actually given it a proper name because some people were using Parasite SEO and a few other bits and pieces. They were never really kind of settling on a term. We now have site reputation abuse from the official Google documentation from Search Central. And it's kind of what you think it is. It's that Parasite SEO we've been talking about quite a lot on the show over the last few months, when third parties are accessing reputable sites and using that reputation to essentially manipulate the SERPs, exactly as we were talking about earlier, often with affiliate links. They use examples like payday loans and kind of like dodgy gambling things and all that kind of stuff. And the fact that you can get these basically click farming things, piggybacking off of the reputation of university sites or world-renowned news sites and all this kind of stuff. And I find it very interesting that Google is now tackling this, because a lot of people have been talking a lot about this. This has been a huge, huge topic, basically taken over SEO Twitter over the last few months. So it's nice to see Google actually addressing it, giving it a name and giving proper regulations. I appreciate how quickly they kind of turned around and had a look at this. And I think there's a lot to talk about with it. I know we have an article here from the one and only Barry Schwartz at SE Roundtable talking about how this is going to come forward with the spam updates that have just been happening. I know we're still, at time of recording, still in the March core update as well, which
day
is
49.
Now more the April update than almost as much of an April update as it is a March update at this point. And a tweet here from Lily Ray asking whether the site reputation abuse component of Google's new spam site will be enforced via manual actions or algorithmically. So will you see your sites completely drop out of the SERPs and all that kind of stuff? Turns out it's both. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone, right? Like,
no, that's, yeah. I mean, when you see manual actions, they are, I think, just that, manual, in that a human has looked at it. And in my opinion, they get flagged in two ways, which is one, yes, if you embarrass Google and go online and be like, look at what I've done, then yeah, they will go and log in and then you'll get a penalty.
Yep.
And the only other way I can see this happening is that sites are algorithmically flagged. So they have a queue and it's like, this looks dodgy, get a human to go look at it. And I don't think they spend very long at it.
Looks pretty dodgy to me.
I think, I think that's how that happens. I don't think there's many, I don't think you're getting sites that are getting penalty notices that are fully algorithmic. There is algorithmic stuff like the HCU, which has a massive impact on traffic, but it's not a manual action. So I don't think there's anything particularly surprising about that, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. The interesting one that, actually you flagged in our little group chat earlier on, Mark, is talking about Forbes specifically and what Forbes has been up to. They have essentially no indexed their entire coupons directive, where their whole directory of /Groupons, that was a slip of the tongue, Freudian slip.
That's
coupons.
Branding for you.
I know, right? Yeah. Very clever branding. Or just my stupid brain. Forbes.com/coupons has been no indexed. And then, as we were just talking about, these reputable sites, Forbes being a perfect example there, a lot of people were piggybacking off this kind of stuff, especially in that coupons thing, because that's where you see a lot of the affiliate linky kind of stuff anyway. I assume you'd kind of try and sneak your way in there and hide away amongst the other coupons and hope they don't catch you in your gambling site or whatever. And I found it very interesting to see such a large drop in visibility here. And then, as we'll get onto with a little study from Lily Ray, there's actually more to this than we think as well. Why are you feeling about this de-indexing of coupons?
I actually don't know, because we've had the spam update and the March update so far have essentially landed us in a position where I think we've way gone down on the side of whatever you want to call them, authoritative sites, brands. Yep. That's basically all that's ranking now for lots of queries. And with that, has come a magnification of what they're now calling abuse. I kind of feel that Google's really kind of roughshod in them here, the big sites as well, in that, you know, historically it's like, okay, well, we don't want you sticking ads everywhere, so don't do that. We're going to monetize this, you know, and a lot of the strategy for a lot of these sites came down to, well, we get a lot of traffic, we can't monetize it effectively. But, you know, having all these links and people trusting us means we can also launch like a coupon section of the site. And that would appear in search, and that's how we can monetize it. And now Google's coming along and being like, nah, you can't do that either. So I feel like there's, you know, my conspiracy side is what we spoke about before, say with like Google giving out the generative AI news to smaller publishers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I kind of feel like they're rug pulling a little bit on these bigger brands. But I feel they have to do that because they've seen and they probably knew what was going to happen with the algorithm updates that they've rolled out. they modeled it and they could see with tests that it's going to come very heavily on the side of established websites. So we need to at least counter that in some way. So yeah, the overall is, I think it's probably going to be a good thing for smaller publishers in that it's going to create breathing space for them to rank.
Yeah.
Obviously bad for big publishers because it's taking away their monetization. And I suspect that has something to do with Google's own monetization of, essentially, it's like, well, we can make some more money from the search results if
we can serve more ads, etc.
Yeah, like if we, you know, don't have these sites there.
Definitely. Lily Ray dug into the data, as she always does. Shout out to Lily Ray, always great for digging into this data, and talks about essentially a double whammy. She describes it, the Forbes vetted area, which is their best of section, which is a lot of traffic.
See affiliate stuff.
It's all the affiliate stuff. Exactly. That also seems to be a hit with the helpful content update, exactly as you were just saying there, Mark, and the spam stuff as well. So combining the coupon stuff with the site reputation abuse, and then this also getting caught up in the site reputation abuse as well with all the affiliate stuff, having the best of articles being hit so hard. Seems like Forbes are not doing too well at the moment, and they've kind of been hit from both sides.
Well, I think the timeline here was these updates came out, and I reckon that Forbes spotted their affiliate stuff started crashing with their first-party data before anyone would have seen it externally.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Google announced that about the 5th of May site reputation abuse at the same time they announced the initial algorithm update.
Yep.
So I reckon Forbes were like, cool, Google update. Uh-oh, we're being targeted by this. So that, I reckon, has pushed their decision to be like, we need to mitigate risk to the rest of the site.
Yeah,
so this, to me, is cutting off the, what's the saying? Cutting off the foot to save the leg or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I would bet a huge amount of money that if Forbes' best of, like, affiliate section had not experienced any change, I don't think there'd be no indexing coupons now. They'd be like, let's see what happens. But because they know that the algorithm change has targeted them, they now, it's a fair assumption that they're going to come off worse because they're doing the thing that Google says not to do. But obviously lots of big brands do things Google tell them not to do, but get away with it because they're big brands and they have to get out of jail free card of people expect them to be in the SERPs.
Like,
you can't permanently ban Expedia or hotels.com because people want them in the SERP. So I reckon that's what's happened there.
Yeah, I wonder if that kind of shifts more towards, again, talking about how people search for brands and stuff. Like, does that then increase direct traffic, like navigational search intent and all that kind of stuff? People just, oh, I can't find Expedia on Google, then I'm just going to go and look for it directly and that kind of stuff. I think I've definitely done that. I'm like putting that piece together in my own brain right now over the last few months of getting frustrated with Google SERPs, being like, I think I can just spell the name of the site that I want and just type it straight in and hope for the best kind of thing. And I wonder like how much of that, because that is definitely affecting Google's, you know, revenue and stuff, right? If people are just going straight into direct traffic stuff.
Yeah, well, it affects the satisfaction of their search result. I mean, Expedia's done, not to pick on Expedia, but they're a good example because they're, you know, one of the biggest kind of travel sites, and they've done naughty things, and they actually got removed for a few days from Google. But nobody gets removed from Google and comes back a few days later unless you're that big, you know?
Yeah,
when I've had sites penalized, it's like months before
if at all
you get reconsideration request, and then it's they make it, as they should do, like a torturous process to make sure you've done your best job of cleaning up the mess you've made. But they can't, because people expect those sites to be in the search, so they're kind of stuck unless it's a really egregious, you know, piss take, basically.
Yeah, I wonder what it would have to be. Like, how big do you have to be to get away with something terrible? And how terrible does the thing you have to do to get you finally, like, fully removed from the site?
I mean,
what's the, like, tipping point there?
I mean, you know, a site like that with that much traffic, like you take it out of Google for a couple of days, you are costing them so much money you will scare them into doing whatever it is they need to be doing.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, folks, let us know what you think of the, at time of recording, still ongoing March core update, all the site reputation abuse. As you mentioned, Mark, the 5th of May is the date that a lot of that stuff is going to go into action. You can go and read the Google documentation, all the articles and stuff like that we've been talking about. Go and check them out in the show notes. Shout out to Glenn Gabe, Lily Ray, Barry Schwartz, all the fantastic people who provide articles for us to talk about on the show as well. Of course, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. And Mark and I will be back next month with another recap episode. It'll be May, the May recap episode. Mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy? Yeah, God. It was like far away, but it'll come around quicker than we think, I think.
Be interesting talking about the May the 5th update on our update.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure we'll follow up this with the next one, and maybe the March update will have finished by then. We'll be able to discuss final rollouts and final kind of like the crater that has been left in the SERPs after it as well. I'll, of course, be back next week and the following weeks with plenty of guests and interviews and all that kind of stuff. And until then, thanks so much for watching. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll see you next week.